"How do you feel, your lordship?" said Corporal Nobbs, the upwardly mobile.
"Who are you?"
"Corporal Nobbs, sir," said Nobby, saluting.
"Do we employ you?"
"Yes, sir."
"Ah, you're the dwarf, are you?"
"No, sir. That was the late Cuddy, sir. I'm one of the human beings, sir."
"You're not employed as the result of any special hiring procedures?"
"No, sir," said Nobby proudly.
"My word," said the patrician. He was feeling a little light-headed from loss of blood. The Arch-Chancellor had also given him a long drink of something he said was a marvellous remedy, although he'd been unspecific as to what it cured. Verticality, apparently. It was wise to remain sitting upright, though. It was a good idea to be seen to be alive. A lot of inquisitive people were peering around the door. It was important to ensure that rumours of his death were greatly exaggerated. Corporal self-proclaimed Human Nobbs and some other guards had closed in around the patrician on Captain Vimes's orders. Some of them were a lot bulkier than he rather muzzily remembered.
"You there, my man, have you taken the king's shilling?" he inquired of one.
"I never took nothing."
"Capital. Well done."
And then the crowds scattered. Something golden and vaguely dog-like burst through, growling, its nose close to the ground, and was gone again, covering the ground to the library in long, easy strides. The patrician was aware of conversation.
"Fred?"
"Yes, Nobby?"
"Did that look a bit, familiar to you?"
"I know what you mean." Nobby fidgeted awkwardly.
"You should have bawled her out for not being in uniform," he said. "Bit tricky, that. If I'd run through here without me clothes on, you'd fine me half a dollar for being improperly dressed."
"Here's half a dollar, Nobby. Now shut up."
Lord Vetinari beamed at them. Then there was the guard in the corner, another of the big lumpy ones.
"Still all right, your lordship?" said Nobby.
"Who's that, gentleman?"
He followed the patrician's gaze.
"That's Detritus, the troll, sir."
"Why is he sitting like that?"
"He's thinking, sir."
"He hasn't moved for some time."
"He thinks slow, sir."
Detritus stood up. There was something about the way he did it, some hint of a mighty continent beginning a tectonic movement that would end in the fearsome creation of some unscalable mountain range, which made people stop and look. Not one of the watchers was familiar with the experience of watching mountain building, but now they had some vague idea of what it was like. It was like Detritus standing up, with Cuddy's twisted axe in his hand.
"But deep, sometimes," said Nobby,
eyeing various possible escape routes. The troll stared at the crowd as if wondering what they were doing there, then, arms swinging, he began to walk forward.
"Acting Constable Detritus, as you were,"
Colon ventured. Detritus ignored him. He was moving quite fast now, in the deceptive way that lava does. He reached the wall and punched it out of the way.
"Has anyone been giving him sulphur?" said Nobby.
Colon looked around at the guard.
"Lance Constable Bauxite, Lance Constable Coalface, apprehend Acting Constable Detritus."
The two trolls looked first at the retreating form of Detritus, and then at one another, and finally at Sergeant Colon. Bauxite managed a salute.
"Permission for leave to attend Grandmother's funeral, sir."
"Why?"
"It's her or me, Sarge." "We get our Goohoolug heads kicked in," said Coalface, the less circuitous thinker.
A match flared. In the sewers, its light was like a nova. Vimes lit first his cigar and then a lamp.
"Dr. Cruces," he said.
The chief of assassins froze.
"Corporal Carrot here has a crossbow, too," he said. "I'm not sure if he'd use it. He's a good man. He thinks everyone else is a good man. I'm not. I'm mean, nasty, and tired. And now, Doctor, you've had time to think. You're an intelligent man. What were you doing down here, please? It can't be to look for the mortal remains of young Edward, because our Corporal Nobbs has taken him off to the Watch Morgue this morning, probably nicking any small items of personal jewellery he had on him. But that's just Nobby's way. He's got a criminal mind, as our Nobby. But I'll say this for him. He hasn't got a criminal soul. I hope he's cleaned the clown makeup off the poor chap. Dear me, you used him, didn't you? He killed poor old Beano, and then he got the gun, and he was there when it killed Haverhock.
He even left a bit of his Beano wig in the timbers. And just when he could have done with some good advice, such as to turn himself in, you killed him. The interesting point, is that young Edward couldn't have been the man on the tower a little while ago, not with the stab wound in his heart and everything. I know that being dead isn't always a barrier to quiet enjoyment in this city, but I don't think young Edward has been up and about much. The piece of cloth was a nice touch, but you know, I've never believed in that stuff. Footprints in the flower bed, telltale buttons, stuff like that. People think that stuff's policing. It's not. Policing's luck and slog most of the time. But lots of people would believe it. I mean, he's been dead, what, not 2 days? And it's nice and cool down here. You could haul him up, I dare say. You could fool people who didn't look too close once he was on a slab. And you'd have got the man who shot the patrician. Mind you, half the city would be fighting the other half by then, I dare say. Some more deaths would be involved. I wonder if you'd care. He paused. You still haven't said anything.
You have no understanding, said Cruces. Yes, De F was right. He was mad, but he was right.
About what, Dr. Cruces? Said Vimes. And then the assassin was gone, diving into a shadow.
Oh, no, said Vimes.
A whisper echoed around the man-made cavern.
Captain Vimes, one thing a good assassin learns is...
There was a thunderous explosion and the lamp disintegrated.
Never stand near the light.
Vimes hit the floor and rolled. Another shot hit a foot away, and he felt the splash of cold water. There was water under him, too. The Ankh was rising, and in accordance with laws older than those of the city, the water was finding its way back up the tunnels. Carrot, Vimes whispered.
Yes?
The voice came from somewhere in the pitch blackness to his right. I can't see a thing. I lost my night vision lighting that damn lamp.
I can feel water coming in.
Vimes began, and stopped as he formed a mental picture of the hidden Cruces aiming at a patch of sound. I should have shot him first, he thought. He's an assassin. He had to raise himself slightly to keep his face out of the rising water. Then he heard a gentle splashing. Cruces was walking towards them. There was a scratching noise, and then light. Cruces had lit a torch, and Vimes looked up to see the skinny shape in the glow. His other hand was steadying the gun. Something Vimes had learned as a young guard drifted up from memory. If you have to look along the shaft of an arrow from the wrong end, if a man has you entirely at his mercy, then hope like hell that man is an evil man. Because the evil like power. Power over people. And they want to see you in fear. They want you to know you're going to die. So they'll talk. They'll gloat. They'll watch you squirm. They'll put off the moment of murder like another man will put off a good cigar. So hope like hell your captor is an evil man. A good man will kill you with hardly a word. Then, to his everlasting horror, he heard Carrot stand up. Dr. Cruces, I arrest you for the murder of Bjorn Hammerhock, Edward de Eth, Beano the Clown, Lettuce Nibs, and Acting Constable Cuddy of the City Watch.
Dear me, all those. I'm afraid Edward killed Brother Beano. That was his own idea, the little fool. He said he hadn't meant to, and I understand that Hammerhock was killed accidentally. A freak accident. He poked around, and the charge fired, and the slug bounced off his anvil and killed him. That's what Edward said. He came to see me afterwards. He was very upset. Made a clean breast of the whole thing, you know. So, I killed him. Well, what else could I do? He was quite mad. There's no dealing with that sort of person. May I suggest you step back, sire? I'd prefer not to shoot you. No, not unless I have to.
It seemed to Vimes that Cruces was arguing with himself. The gun swung violently.
He was babbling, said Cruces. He said the gun killed Hammerhock. I said it was an accident, and he said, no, no accident. The gun killed Hammerhock.
Carrot took another step forward. Cruces seemed to be in his own world now.
No, the gun killed the beggar girl too. It wasn't me. Why should I do a thing like that?
Cruces took a step back, but the gun swung up towards Carrot. It looked to Vimes as though it moved of its own accord, like an animal sniffing the air.
Get down, Vimes hissed.
He reached out and tried to find his crossbow.
He said the gun was jealous. Hammerhock would have made more guns. Stop where you are.
Carrot took another step. I had to kill Edward. He was a romantic. He would have got it wrong. But Ankh Morpork needs a king. The gun jerked and fired at the same moment as Carrot leapt sideways. The tunnels were brilliant with smells, mostly the acrid yellows and earthy oranges of ancient drains. And there were hardly any air currents to disturb things. The line that was Cruces snaked through the heavy air, and there was the smell of the gone, as vivid as a wound. I smelled gone in the guild, she thought, just after Cruces walked past. And Gaspode said that was all right because the gone had been in the guild, but it hadn't been fired in the guild. I smelled it because someone there had fired the thing. She splashed through the water into the big cavern and saw with her nose the three of them, the indistinct figure that smelled of vimes, the falling figure that was Carrot, the turning shape with the gone. And then she stopped thinking with her head and let her body take over. Wolf muscle drove her forward and up into a leap, water droplets flying from her mane, her eyes fixed on Cruce's neck. The gone fired four times. It didn't miss once. She hit the man heavily, knocking him backwards. Vimes rose in an explosion of spray.
Six shots! That's six shots, you bastard! I've got you now!
Cruces turned as Vimes waded towards him and scurried towards a tunnel, throwing up more spray. Vimes snatched the bow from Carrot, aimed desperately and pulled the trigger. Nothing happened.
Carrot, you idiot! You never cocked the damn thing!
Vimes turned.
Come on, man, we can't let him get away!
It's Angua, Captain.
What?
She's dead.
Carrot, listen. Can you find the way out in this stuff? No, so come with me.
I can't leave her here.
Corporal Carrot, follow me!
Vimes half ran, half waded through the rising water towards the tunnel that had swallowed Cruces. It was up a slope. He could feel the water dropping as he ran. Never give the quarry time to rest. He'd learned that on his first day in the watch. If you had to chase, then stay with it. Give the pursued time to stop and think, and you'd go round a corner to find a sock full of sand coming the other way. The walls and ceiling were closing in. There were other tunnels here. Carrot had been right. Hundreds of people must have worked for years to build this. What Ankh Morpork was built on was Ankh Morpork. Vimes stopped. There was no sound of splashing, and tunnel mouths all around. Then there was a flash of light up a side tunnel. Vimes scrambled towards it and saw a pair of legs in a shaft of light from an open trapdoor. He launched himself at them and caught a boot just as it was disappearing into the room above. It kicked at him, and he heard Cruces hit the floor. Vimes grabbed at the edge of the hatchway and struggled through it. This wasn't a tunnel, it looked like a cellar. He slipped on mud and hit a wall clammy with slime. What was Ankh Morpork built on? Right. Cruces was only a few yards away, scrambling and slipping up a flight of steps. There had been a door at the top, but it had long ago rotted. There were more steps and more rooms. Fire and flood, flood and rebuilding. Rooms had become cellars, cellars had become foundations. It wasn't an elegant pursuit. Both men slithered and fell, clambered up again, fought their way through hanging curtains of slime. Cruces had left candles here and there. They gave just enough light to make Vimes wish they didn't. And then there was dry stone underfoot, and this wasn't a door, but a hole knocked through a wall. And there were barrels and sticks of furniture, ancient stuff that had been locked up and forgotten. Cruces was lying a few feet away, fighting for breath, and hammering another rack of pipes into the gonne. Vimes managed to pull himself up onto his hands and knees and gulped air. There was a candle wedged into the wall nearby.
Got you, he panted.
Cruces tried to get to his feet, still clutching the gun.
You're too old to run, Vimes managed.
Cruces made it upright and lurched away. Vimes thought about it.
I'm too old to run, he added and leapt.
The two men rolled in the dust, the gun between them. It struck Vimes much later that the last thing any man of sense would do was fight an assassin. They had concealed weapons everywhere. But Cruces wasn't going to let go of the gun. He held it grimly in both hands, trying to hit Vimes with the barrel or the butt. Curiously enough, assassins learned hardly any unarmed combat. They were generally good enough at armed combat not to need it. Gentlemen bore arms. Only the lower classes used their hands.
I've got you, Vimes panted. You're under arrest. Be under arrest, will you?
But Cruces wouldn't let go. Vimes didn't dare let go. The gun would be twisted out of his grip. It was pulled backwards and forwards between them in desperate grunting concentration. The gun exploded. There was a tongue of red fire, a firework stink, and a zing-zing noise from three walls. Something struck Vimes's helmet and zinged away towards the ceiling. Vimes stared at Cruce's contorted features. Then he lowered his head and yanked the gun hard. The assassin screamed and let go, clutching at his nose. Vimes rolled back, gun in both hands. It moved. Suddenly the stock was against his shoulder and his finger was on the trigger.
"You're mine. We don't need him anymore."
The shock of the voice was so great that he cried out. He swore afterwards that he didn't pull the trigger. It moved of its own accord, pulling his finger with it. The gun slammed into his shoulder, and a 6-inch hole appeared in the wall by the assassin's head, spraying him with plaster. Vimes was vaguely aware, through the red mist rising around his vision, of Cruces staggering to a door and lurching through it, slamming it behind him.
"All that you hate, all that is wrong, I can put it right."
Vimes reached the door and tried the handle. It was locked. He brought the gun around, not aware of thinking, and let the trigger pull his finger again. A large area of the door and frame became a splinter-bordered hole. Vimes kicked the rest of it away and followed the gun. He was in a passageway. A dozen young men were looking at him in astonishment from half-open doors. They were all wearing black. He was inside the Assassin's Guild. A trainee assassin looked at Vimes with his nostrils.
"Who are you, pray?"
The gun swung towards him. Vimes managed to haul the barrel upwards just as it fired, and the shot took away a lot of ceiling.
"The law, you sons of bitches!" he shouted.
They stared at him.
"Shoot them all. Clean up the world.
Shut up!"
Vimes, a red-eyed, dust-coated, slime-dripping thing from out of the earth, glared at the quaking student.
"Where did Cruces go?"
The mist rolled around his head. His hand creaked with the effort of not firing. The young man jerked a finger urgently towards a flight of stairs. He'd been standing very close when the gun fired. Plaster dust draped him like devil's dandruff. The gun sped away again, dragging Vimes past the boys and up the stairs where black mud still trailed. There was another corridor there. Doors were opening. Doors closed again after the gun fired again, smashing a chandelier. The corridor gave out onto a wide landing at the top of a much more impressive flight of stairs and opposite a big oaken door. Vimes shot the lock off, kicked at the door, and then fought the gun long enough to duck. A crossbow bolt whirred over his head and hit someone far down the corridor.
"Shoot him! Shoot him!"
Cruces was standing by his desk, feverishly trying to slot another bolt into his bow. Vimes tried to silence the singing in his ears. But
why not? Why not fire? Who was this man?
He'd always wanted to make the city a cleaner place, and he might as well start here, and then people would find out what the law was. Clean up the world. Noon started. The cracked bronze bell in the Teachers' Guild began the chime, and had midday all to itself for at least 7 clangs before the Guild of Baker's clock, running fast, caught up with it. Cruces straightened up and began to edge towards the cover of one of the stone pillars.
"You can't shoot me," he said, watching the gun. "I know the law, and so do you. You're a guard. You can't shoot me in cold blood."
Vimes squinted along the barrel. It'd be so easy. The trigger tugged at his finger. A third bell began chiming.
"You can't just kill me. That's the law. And you're a guard,"
Dr. Cruces repeated. He licked his dry lips. The barrel lowered a little. Cruces almost relaxed.
"Yes, I am a guard."
The barrel rose again, pointed at Cruces' forehead.
"But when the bells stop," said Vimes quietly, "I won't be a guard any more."
"Shoot him! Shoot him!"
Vimes forced the butt under his arm so that he had one hand free.
"We'll do it by the rules," he said. "By the rules. Got to do it by the rules."
Without looking down, he tugged his badge off the remains of his jacket. Even through the mud, it still had a gleam. He'd always kept it polished. When he spun it once or twice like a coin, the copper caught the light. Cruces watched it like a cat. The bells were slackening. Most of the towers had stopped. Now there was only the sound of the gong on the Temple of Small Gods and the bells of the Assassin's Guild, which were always fashionably late. The gong stopped. Dr. Cruces put the crossbow neatly and meticulously on the desk beside him.
"There, I've put it down."
"Ah," said Vimes, "but I want to make sure you don't pick it up again."
The black bell of the Assassin's Guild hammered its way to noon and stopped. Silence slammed in like a thunderclap.
The little metallic sound as Vimes's badge bounced on the floor filled it from edge to edge. He raised the gun and gently let the tension ease out of his hand. A bell started. It was a tinny, jolly little tune, barely to be heard at all except in this pool of silence. Cling-bing-a-bing-bong, bing-bong, cling-bong. But much more accurate than hourglasses, water clocks and pendulums.
"Put down the gun, Captain," said Carrot, climbing slowly up the stairs.
He held his sword in one hand and the presentation watch in the other. Bing-a-bing-a-bing, cling-bong-bong. Vimes didn't move.
"Put it down. Put it down now, Captain."
"I can wait out another bell," said Vimes. "A-bing-a-bing-a-bing.
Can't let you do that, Captain. It'd be murder.
Clong-a-bing-bong. You'll stop me, will you?"
"Yes.
Bing-bing."
Vimes turned his head slightly.
"He killed Agua. Doesn't that mean anything to you?"
"Bing-bing-bing."
Carrot nodded.
"Yes, but personal isn't the same as important."
Vimes looked along his arm. The face of Dr. Cruce's mouth, open in terror, pivoted on the tip of the barrel.
Bing, 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 bing.
Captain Vimes?
Bing. Captain. Badge 177, Captain. It's never had more than dirt on it.
The pounding spirit of the gun flowing up Vimes's arms met the armies of sheer stone-headed Vimesness surging the other way.
"I should put it down, Captain. You don't need it," said Carrot, like someone speaking to a child.
Vimes stared at the thing in his hands. The screaming was muted now.
"Put that down, Watchman. That's an order."
The gun hit the floor. Vimes saluted and then realised what he was doing. He blinked at Carrot.
"Personal isn't the same as important," he said. "Listen," Cruces said. "I'm sorry about the girl. That was an accident. But I only wanted... There's evidence. There's a..."
Cruces was hardly paying attention to the watchman. He pulled a leather satchel off the table and waved it at them.
"It's here. All of it, sire. Evidence. Edward was stupid. He thought it was all crowns and ceremony. He had no idea what he'd found. And then, last night, it was as if..."
"I'm not interested," mumbled Vimes.
"The city needs a king."
"It does not need murderers," said Carrot.
"But..."
And then Cruces dived for the gun and scooped it up. One moment Vimes was trying to reassemble his thoughts, and the next they were fleeing to far corners of his consciousness. He was looking into the mouth of the gun. It grinned at him. Cruces slumped against the pillar, but the gun remained steady, pointing itself at Vimes.
"It's all there, sire," he said. "Everything written down, the whole thing. Birthmarks and prophecies and genealogy and everything. Even your sword. It's the sword."
"Really?" said Carrot. "May I see?"
Carrot lowered his sword and, to Vimes's horror, walked over to the desk and pulled the bundle of documents out of the case. Cruces nodded approvingly, as if rewarding a good boy. Carrot read a page and turned to the next one.
"This is interesting," he said.
"Exactly. But now we must remove this annoying policeman," said Cruces.
Vimes felt that he could see all the way along the tube to the little slug of metal that was soon to launch itself at him.
"It's a shame," said Cruces. "If only you had..."
Carrot stepped in front of the gun. His arm moved in a blur. There was hardly a sound. "Pray you never face a good man," Vimes thought. "He'll kill you with hardly a word." Cruces looked down. There was blood on his shirt. He raised a hand to the sword hilt protruding from his chest and looked back up into Carrot's eyes.
"But why? You could have been..."
And he died. The gun fell from his hands and fired at the floor. There was silence. Carrot grasped the hilt of his sword and pulled it back. The body slumped. Vimes leaned on the table and fought to get his breath back.
"Damn his hide," he panted.
"Sir?"
"He called you sire," he said. "What was in that?"
"You're late, Captain," said Carrot.
"Late? Late? What do you mean?"
Vimes fought to prevent his brain parting company with reality. "You were supposed to have been married..." Carrot looked at the watch, then snapped it shut and handed it to Vimes. "2 minutes ago."
"Yes. Yes, but he called you sire. I heard him."
Just a trick of the echo, I expect, Mr. Vimes."
A thought broke through to Vimes's attention. Carrot's sword was a couple of feet long. He'd run Cruces clean through, but Cruces had been standing with his back to... Vimes looked at the pillar. It was granite, and a foot thick. There was no cracking. There was just a blade-shaped hole, front to back. "Carrot," he began. "And you look a mess, sir. Got to get you cleaned up." Carrot pulled the leather satchel towards him and slung it over his shoulder. "Carrot, sir, I order you to give—" "No, sir, you can't order me, because you are now, sir, no offence meant, a civilian. It's a new life." "A civilian?" Vimes rubbed his forehead. It was all colliding in his brain now. The gun, the sewers, Carrot and the fact that he'd been operating on pure adrenaline, which soon presents its bill and does not give credit. He sagged. "But this is my life, Carrot. This is my job." "A hot bath and a drink, sir. That's what you need," said Carrot. "Do you a world of good. Let's go." Vimes's gaze took in the fallen body of Cruces, and then the gun. He went to pick it up and stopped himself in time. Not even the wizards had something like this. One burst from a staff and they had to go and lie down. No wonder no one had destroyed it. You couldn't destroy something as perfect as this. It called out to something deep in the soul. Hold it in your hand and you had power. More power than any bow or spear. They just stored up your own muscles' power, when you thought about it. But the gun gave you power from outside. You didn't use it. It used you. Cruces had probably been a good man. He'd probably listened kindly enough to Edward, and then he'd taken the gun, and he'd belonged to it as well. "Captain Vimes, I think we'd better get that out of here," said Carrot, reaching down. "Whatever you do, don't touch it," Vimes warned. "Why not? It's only a device," said Carrot. He picked up the gun by the barrel, regarded it for a moment, and then smashed it against the wall. Bits of metal pinwheeled away. "One of a kind," he said. "One of a kind is always special, my father used to say. Let's be going." He opened the door. He shut the door. "There's about 100 assassins at the bottom of the stairs," he said.